As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys indeed?
All right, it's week two, Cowboys fans. We are back. Another About Them Cowboys here, the Athletic Podcast Network. Kent Garrison here producing across our network. Make sure you're subscribed to the Athletic Football Show, too. We're going every day of the week covering the entire NFL on that podcast. So check that out and make sure you're subscribed to the Athletic Football Show and theathletic.com/aboutthemcowboys if you want to be an Athletic subscriber and make sure you get all of our episodes in the back pocket, right next to the articles of Father John Mashoda. And this episode of About Them Cowboys is presented by Visa. Visa is the network working for everyone. Father John Mashoda is working for everyone. He is back. We've got Saad Youssef from The Athletic back. And also back, we've got Kevin K.T. Turner from The Eagle and from Sports and Such, which is premiering this Saturday at 2 p.m. on the CW here locally in DFW. Make sure you check that out if you watch television and like sports and stuff, and such, and things. KT, welcome. I'm excited to watch the show and see your comedy stylings.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the plug. I'm very uncomfortable talking about the things I do. But yeah, thank you. One thing I'll say is one of the inspirations behind the idea to do that show was the love for Norm MacDonald that I know you and I both share, and
of course,
sure Saad and John Mashoda think Norm MacDonald's pretty funny. And so, yeah, I'd like to dedicate this episode of About Them Cowboys to Norm MacDonald because, you know, he might be okay with that. Yeah, right. Let's start with the Lyle Collins thing because we'll talk Chargers. We'll get there. This is a big one this weekend, a fun one this weekend, but Lyle Collins gone for 5 games. I know it's a weird thing to talk about because the NFL doesn't exactly have some hard set rules in place for their drug testing, but it sure felt odd to me that it was a 5-game suspension. Am I alone here, John?
No, but at the same time, I don't see why they would just be suspending him for 5 games if they didn't have a reason behind it. And from listening to Jerry Jones this morning on 105 Through the Fan, it certainly sounds like there was, and this is again reading in between the lines of Jerry, it sounds like there was an appeals process before the suspension came down, and it was heard by someone in, I don't know if it was with the league or whatever, and they didn't get that, they didn't win their appeal. So it sounds like Lyle is still maybe going to a second appeal, but the Cowboys are planning on not having him for the next 5 games, and that's disappointing. And while you can sit there and blame the league's drug testing policies and things like that, and I know on Twitter there's all kinds of stuff out there. I saw the crazy 180 drug tests and whatever, how many days or whatever. I've also heard that there's no truth to that, but there's going to be all this kind of stuff. I find it hard to believe that they're going to suspend him 5 games if there's just absolutely nothing there in terms of, now, I'm not saying he failed drug tests. It might just be that he didn't show up for them. But either way, it's how do you put yourself in this position? You know, you just come off of missing all of last season. It's just such a bad look to now be out for 5 of your team's first 6 games. You just, I mean, this offensive line, just cannot get the same five out there to save their lives. It's just disappointing. And I get off the plane coming back from Tampa on Friday, and I hear that. I'm just kind of like, does it ever stop? Like, can there ever just be, like, fly under the radar for a little bit and everything just stays normal and you just keep rolling? And then it's like, and then now he's out for five, and then you got, you know, Zach's coming off COVID, but now off the COVID list, but then Randy Gregory's back on it, even though it sounds like he's asymptomatic. But I mean, there's still now not a good chance. I mean, I shouldn't say not a good chance, but it's up in the air if he's even going to be able to play on Sunday against the Chargers. So yeah, I guess if you're a Cowboys fan and you have been a Cowboys fan for more than 5 years, you're probably used to this by now, but it's just disappointing.
Yeah, I guess where I'm at though on that is, so if it happens and you know it was coming, that's one thing. To not know any more about it, I mean, it's not like the league has to tell you, I guess, but we've seen, it seems super penal. You know, I guess five games just seems like a lot. Now, if that means he was in the program or whatever,
that's a whole thing, other though. Thing. Like, I mean, there's, just because you fail one drug test or you don't show up to one drug test, that doesn't mean you're getting five games. If you're getting five games, I mean, it only makes sense that you're getting five games, because there's a long list of issues here that it's to the point where it's like, I don't see them handing out five games if there weren't several warnings along the way.
Saad, we know it's not fantasy football. What are your thoughts on the move being Terrence Steele at right tackle?
I think that it's not overly surprising to me, especially after watching Hard Knocks and stuff, because, you know, you saw Mike McCarthy talk about Ben DiNucci, right? Like, not giving up on a guy in the second year. Like, I'm not surprised that Mike McCarthy's not giving up on Terrence Steele. I think the way that it comes out is going to be Mike McCarthy, if Terrence Steele plays well, then it's going to be like, hey, look, all right, there was improvement from year one to year two. But if he doesn't play well, if he even struggles a little bit, there's going to be a lot of "I told you so" from everybody around, and it's going to be justified, because Terrence Steele, I don't think they're putting their five best out there right now. I mean, if you saw Connor McGovern play, you know that he's one of the five best offensive linemen. The only other thing, and I think John, I don't know if John will agree with this or not, I'm not ready to pin this completely on McCarthy, because it sure doesn't sound like Zach Martin wants to swing out to tackle either. So I think that's something that you have to consider as well.
No, that's a factor in it for sure. But to your earlier point, Terrence Steele will struggle in this game. I mean, he's not going to shut down Joey Bosa. It's just not going to happen. It's unrealistic. I don't care how much better he got in the weight program in the offseason, or how much he's improved, as the Cowboys have told us, as I've heard on and off the record for the last month and a half. And they would love nothing more than to be developing this guy who ends up being like one of the future tackles for this team. I mean, just imagine if they were able to do that off of an undrafted guy. It would be fantastic, especially considering that, I mean, Lyle, Tyron Smith, and Zach Martin haven't started a game together since Jason Garrett's last game as head coach. So, and actually, you know what? It was the one right before. It was actually the game. It was the second to last. It was the one up in Philly, which is basically secured that, you know, that was done there. So, you know, what's kind of surprising too, I looked this up, with all three of them starting together, the Cowboys are 25 and 26. So it's not even like when you have all three of them. Now, part of it was because of Lyle's rookie year in 2015, they were dumpster fire. So it was real bad that year, but still, like, you'd think it'd be pretty good ways over 500 when all three of them are playing. Not the case, but you still would prefer to have them out there. To Saad's earlier point, though, if you were just making about putting your five best out there, the five best offensive linemen going into the season for this team are Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, Lyle Collins, Connor Williams, and Connor McGovern. So you wouldn't even have Biadasz out there, and that's why they wanted so badly for Connor Williams to win that center job. If you're a subscriber to The Athletic, which I hope you are, you'll read Bob Sturm's piece today where he breaks down the offensive line and didn't exactly have glowing reviews about Tyler Biadasz's game Thursday night against the Buccaneers. So yeah, they have major issues here on this offensive line. Now, I don't think Terrence Steele is going to be Chaz Green, but there's so much PTSD from Cowboys fans because of seeing that Chaz Green game in Atlanta. And then the fact that we did get to see Terrence Steele start 14 games last year, and it was not good. And it's hard to believe that all of a sudden it's been cleaned up and he's improved significantly enough to start the following year. So while it leaves me scratching my head about their decision making on Terrence Steele, it also kind of has me thinking, like, well, how bad are things with Ty Nesecki? So,
well, yeah, my wonder was if they had just kind of designated Ty Nesecki was going to back up Tyron and Terrence Steele would be backing up Lyle, and that's just what they're going to go with, and we've got a plan and we're going to stick with it.
I think they just feel comfortable with Ty just being a guy as a swing tackle is only going to play a certain number of snaps. I don't think they want him out there playing an entire game, especially for what looks like it'll be the next five games.
Yeah, and one thing about Terrence Steele, to be fair, he was always a developmental guy
right.
who was forced into starting 14 games because Lyle was not there. So here you go. Now you get to really see what your developmental guy's got. I do think he deserves a bit of a leash if the plan is to truly keep him there for 5 weeks. You're telling me that's your plan now, then that needs to be your plan. Now, if he gets beat by Joey Bosa, which could happen, you go to week three and you got Philadelphia, you give him another shot. But we start talking 2-3 weeks in a row of just kind of being terrible. We've got to have the talk with Zach Martin. Whether Zach Martin wants to do it or not doesn't really matter.
Take one for the team, literally, Zach.
Literally, and we know Zach Martin can do it. And it is ironic that the team you play is the Chargers, who took Rashawn Slater from Northwestern
amazing on Sunday.
I mean, he looked great. He was. I mean, I think he's the guy in this class that I would pencil in if you were just like, who are the people from this draft? You get one guy, name the guy who is your the most Hall of Fame or who's the best player in this draft. That might be the guy. I mean, I'm sure Penei Sewell could have an argument, and we know the quarterbacks and Trevor Lawrence and all that stuff. But Slater was just such a sure thing. And I ain't mad because Micah Parsons is going to be a good player too. So not mad about what they did, not mad about the direction. It's just funny. Here we are in week two already dealing with this offensive line crap that I was just hoping would be in the rearview mirror. It, really disappointing.
Yeah, and there shouldn't be any second guessing about that. There will be, but at what point are you adding players to the defense? Who are your defensive playmakers if you don't draft Micah Parsons? Like who is it? Jalen Smith, Leighton Vander Esch? Like I don't see how you can second guess that, because if you do, it's just like, wow. So you add Rashawn Slater, so your offense is really good. Guess what? Without Rashawn Slater, your offense is still really good. Like you shouldn't have to have 11 first round picks on offense for it to be executing to the level you need it to. You eventually have to address your defense, and that's what they did with the Micah Parsons, and it looked like they got a good player. Now, if Micah Parsons ended up flaming out and then Rashawn Slater goes on to have like Tyron Smith's career, yeah, you can second guess it down the line, but this isn't Taco Charlton TJ Watt to me.
No, and also, like, you saw Brian Baldinger put out his little Twitter breakdown clip. He said in the tweet, Micah Parsons is already the Cowboys' best defender, so I'm with you. Like, there's no way you can second guess that decision instantly right now.
And think about if they don't draft Parsons. Look at the snap counts from Thursday night's game. Look at what Dan Quinn thought of Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith with them playing 16 and 14 snaps respectively. Like, it showed you everything you need to know. Now, Dan said yesterday that's because of the way the game went. Now, obviously, Tom Brady threw 50 times. So, that, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to let you know that if you're going against quarterbacks that's going to throw a lot, which you probably will be going against again on Sunday, that they're probably going to go with their speedier linebackers that they trust in coverage, which will, again, be Micah Parsons, who should never come off the field, and Keanu O'Neal. And so just think, if they don't draft Micah Parsons, like, is Jabril Cox playing over those guys? I mean, like, that. It's pretty clear what Dan Quinn thinks about Vander Esch and Jalen Smith through one game so far with everybody healthy. So I know there will be second guessing, but I have no issues with the Micah Parsons pick at all. I think it's much needed, and from what everything I've seen so far, he looks like he's going to be an outstanding player. And for the time I've covered this team, there aren't very many people that you can say were outstanding players in this defense.
Couldn't agree more. Saad, you comfortable with Cedric Wilson as your wide receiver three, as Michael Gallup is going to miss 3 to 5 weeks with a strained calf?
Yeah, honestly, I am. Like, when you talk, like, same thing that John is saying, like, yeah, we have this outlook of the receivers being that you have these three studs and everything, but the requirement shouldn't be that you have three 1,000-yard receivers just to have a good top three. If you have Michael Gallup, that's great, but you should be able to operate with Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb with a serviceable number three, which is Cedric Wilson. So I'm absolutely comfortable with that. I think, you know, if you are able to take a hit on one position in this entire roster, it is wide receiver.
Absolutely, and you have so many playmakers that Kellen Moore can use, and they feel comfortable with Cedric Wilson. I mean, they did last year. You know, Cedric Wilson got a lot of work with the ones because Amari wasn't doing anything in training camp. I mean, this isn't going to be like some, oh, I'm up next? I didn't even think this could. I mean, Cedric Wilson's ready for this. But on top of that, it's like even if he wasn't, it's like you already have CD, you have Amari, you have one of the best quarterbacks in the league, you have Tony Pollard, you have Ezekiel Elliott, you have Blake Jarwin, you have Dalton Schultz. Like, how many weapons do you need to be a successful offense? There's plenty to work with there if Michael Gallup's going to be gone for, well, he's definitely going to be gone for the next three games and possibly a game or two more than that. Like, as long as these other guys are there, this roster is built to take on losing a guy like this for a few weeks.
Yeah, I really like Cedric Wilson's just, you know, ability to kind of step in and be ready to go all the time, almost like a really good NBA bench player. And that's really what it is, and he'll help you on special teams, all those things. That's really great. The thing I would say, and when we were just kind of having fun talking about the draft and Michael Parsons and Rashawn Slater, and you go to like what they did, you know, on day two, they had to take Kelvin Joseph, who's still not healthy. It was very evident that they need help at cornerback because Anthony Brown got picked on. I mean, it was basically dealer's choice, and Antonio Brown was the guy that Tom Brady knew he had a mismatch on and was picking on Anthony Brown pretty much all day. And there's really nothing the Cowboys could do about that, and it just got me thinking, man, I know it's the Bucs, I know it's the Super Bowl champs, I know it's Tom Brady, but how many weeks are we going to be talking about this on this podcast before the game going, I don't know how we're going to cover them, because I definitely kind of have that feeling today with Keenan Allen, who can always get open still. Mike Williams, more of the physical type. Tom Brady wasn't looking at Mike Evans very much. So that does kind of give me a little hope right there. But Mike Williams, still a big red zone threat and so good with the size. And they're running out former Cowboy Jalen Guyton as their number three wide receiver. And that's not to mention what they're doing at tight end with Jared Cook and using Stevens as well. So, I mean, it's going to be another week where you're kind of going, okay, it's going to be tough to cover. Going to be tough to cover because that quarterback over there is pretty good for the Chargers as well, man.
So the Kelvin Joseph, Nashawn Wright, I don't even think that that's even needs to be brought in the conversation. All you need to do is rewind back to one preseason game before and just see what they did when Trevor Lawrence was out there just throwing the ball all over the field in that final preseason game, to think that the same isn't going to happen with Tom Brady and obviously Justin Herbert, who are, you know, Tom Brady's the greatest of all time. Justin Herbert looks like he's going to be one of the best young quarterbacks in the league and end up being one of the best quarterbacks in the league for a long time. So that's not the issue there. The one issue I would say would be the, at what point do you maybe get Maurice Kennedy in there? I mean, he played so well in training camp. He's a veteran. You saw him play well in the preseason games. I mean, he's more of a slot guy, so they like Jordan Lewis, so Jordan Lewis is there. But if – here's the thing, though. Dan Quinn did not seem to have as many issues with Anthony Brown as we did watching the game. So I don't see him changing that right now, but if that ends up being a thing where he's just getting exploited, then, you know, you're just going to have to make a change, and maybe that means bringing in Maurice Kennedy. I just don't think that Kelvin Joseph, especially being injured right now, and Nashawn Wright, I just don't think they're ready for that type of assignment. And to be honest with you, I really don't think anybody not named Patrick Surtain or J.C. Horn are ready for that assignment. And even with those two, from what I've seen from Micah Parsons so far, I still would probably take Micah Parsons just because of the type of impact he can make on every play in the front seven, on a front seven that I don't think is particularly great.
I mean, week two, you might just go, hey, that's what happened. I don't really know what we could do. It was Godwin. It was Antonio Brown. It was Mike Evans. It's very easy to say that. And quite frankly, if we're being honest, and the Cowboys probably know this too, the way to wins, the path to victory for them is by outscoring teams. We still know that. That hasn't changed. I just wonder if it's not, like, at what point do you pull the plug? Is it week two? Is that too early? Is that a rash decision?
I don't think you can pull the plug because I don't think he trusts the guys that are behind him. Like I said, they look at Kennedy as more of a slot guy. So I don't think that they look at it like, oh, hey, we got somebody that's like competing with him on that other outside corner spot. You know, it'd be different if, let's say, this was let's say Cheeto's still on the roster, then you're like, okay, maybe we'll give some more snaps to Cheeto. Like, yeah, they're kind of set with what they got right now, and I think you got to kind of live with it. I mean, let's be honest. Like, yeah, the Cowboys are loaded on offense, so they're going to throw in a lot of people, but you don't think the Super Bowl champs that are loaded with all their starters on both sides coming back, do you think that they're sitting there going, you know what? I think our corners did pretty good against those Cowboys receivers. Excuse me? How did you think that? You know? Now, of course, they have a much better pass, a front seven. That's a big part of it. But the Cowboys threw on them whenever they wanted to, for the most part, and they're the best team in football, as far as I'm concerned, with everybody coming back. I don't even know if they've played their best ball yet. And so I just feel like there's going to be weaknesses. It's about minimizing those weaknesses. And one way to do it, which is another thing we didn't see in that game, and partly because of Tom Brady, is you just got to get more pressure on the quarterback. There just was not enough pressure. And as great as Justin Herbert is, he's not going to get the ball out as quick as Tom Brady is, because really nobody does.
Well, I don't know about you, John, because you weren't able to be a part of the post-game press conference. But and correct me if I'm wrong, Kent and Saad, I think the three of us were actually happy and pleased with the effort, and we're actually like walked away from that game pretty positive on Thursday night.
I walked away saying on the podcast that the Cowboys should have won the game, given how many mistakes and how many gives that the Tampa Bay had. I mean, they were giving the Cowboys the ball in great field position. The Cowboys were shooting themselves in the foot. The Cowboys should have won the game, as far as I'm concerned. Now, it's not to say Tampa Bay wasn't a better team, but Dallas should have won that game.
I came out thinking very similar. I was surprised that they played that well. And to be honest with you, it really isn't even about the team for me, because this is probably taking it too far. But to me, really, the only thing that matters in the NFL is your franchise quarterback. And when your franchise quarterback plays arguably his best game he's ever played, coming off the injuries he did, that's the most positive thing you can possibly have out of that game. I don't even care how everybody else plays, because 10 years from now, he will still be on the team. The Cowboys will only go as far as Dak Prescott can take them, and he looks like a guy that can take them very far. So that's the biggest positive. Obviously, right after the game, I didn't know Lyle Collins was going to be suspended for 5 games. That would have obviously had an impact. And in terms of the game in general, the only thing that I hated was the 60-yard field goal attempt. But other than that, like, I was like kind of cool with basically the way everything went. They probably needed to take more time off the clock and not give the ball back to Brady, but that just, you know, you've just seen it happen so much. I mean, that's why he's the GOAT. I mean, just what are you going to do, you know? They needed to probably get 7 there, and they didn't. But because even the interception Dak threw across the middle, I thought that was a great pass. It just bounced off CD's hands, and it was aggressive. You know, that's not a pass he was attempting very many times his first couple years in the league. I mean, Jason Garrett, you could just look at his chart after games, and you could see Jason Garrett, Scott Linehan wanted him to keep it on the outside, keep it on the perimeter, not really challenge in the middle. And he threw a great ball there. I mean, he was cooking. Coming out of the game, I was like, man, that's, you know, I know nobody wants to hear about moral victories, and that's fine. But, I mean, again, it all depends on what your opinion is, too, of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I really have a feeling that they might not have played their best ball yet. They started peaking last year in the playoffs. And I saw Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown out there that look like they're in even better shape than they were last year. So I don't even know if they've played their best ball yet. And to sit there and hang with them and almost beat them, like, it really surprised me. Again, I mean, my pick, I had them losing by at least 10.
Yeah, I think the defense and the other thing that we talked about, you know, on the post-game pod, but also just generally, the defense, that the plays that we're making were not, like, accidental. They weren't, like, it wasn't like the Buccaneers were just dropping the ball and things like that. It was it was KZ like punching it was actively making plays. Whether it was DeMarcus Lawrence's strip, whether it was KZ's strip, you know, whatever the case was, they were forcing turnovers, as opposed to just, you know, we see it in the past that even when they have turnovers, sometimes that Jordan Lewis is just getting the ball thrown right to him. That wasn't necessarily the case against Tampa Bay, and I think that's what was super encouraging as well.
Let me point out one other thing that I've really been having an issue with lately, watching college and pro football, and it bothers me, and I don't know why we're not to this point yet. And maybe we are pretty soon, but, like, I really think the regular TV angle, like, does a complete disservice to the players in terms of, like, how great these guys are. And why I say it is, like, you watch a basketball game, a hockey game, you know, baseball game, I guess you can't see the outfield, but for most sports, you can see the entire playing field. Like, I'm just going to use one play as an example. Okay. That deep ball that Tom Brady threw to Antonio Brown, like, when you sit there, that beat Anthony Brown up the right sideline, when you sit there and you watch it on the TV copy and you don't see it from behind, you're just like, oh, look at Antonio Brown. He just torched Anthony Brown. Anthony Brown sucks. Antonio Brown's so much faster. Tom knew he was going there the entire time. you watch it from the all 22, like from behind, crazy how much stuff goes on and how fast like Brady processes it. Jordan Lewis on the other side of the field, he slips a little bit. So instead of DeMonte KZ having a coverage over the top, he's supposed to be on top. Anthony Brown is playing a bail technique, so he has the underneath. So they're doubling Antonio Brown there. But because Jordan Lewis slips, doesn't fall, just slips a little bit, KZ has to come up and get his man that leaves that open. And when you watch it from behind, Tom Brady processes this all in like less than a second. And it's like, boom, sees that changes. That's when he goes and throws the deep ball to Antonio Brown. It is crazy how fast these things go down. It just like guys aren't just running around wide open in the NFL. It's just how fast you have to be. And I'm just hoping that one day we get to a point where like that all 22 look like behind the quarterback is at least up in a small screen in the corner so that people can see that, because there's so much going on outside of the front seven that you have no idea. And as soon as the ball snapped, the camera zooms in on the quarterback. So you see even less. You don't see any of the pick plays. You don't see any of the routes crossing in the backfield at all. It's very focused on what the quarterback is doing, and then it's the throw, and that's it. But that play was incredible, and I know that everyone's going to hate it on Anthony Brown for it. But when you see the whole picture of it, you're just like, yeah. I mean, I don't know what you really was supposed to do. I mean, yeah, Jalen Ramsey would have done a better job, but you know, I don't know what else you're really going to do on that. I mean, Anthony Brown is Anthony Brown for a reason. I mean,
Anthony Brown's that's why not Antonio Brown. I mean, right. That's all you got to say.
And if he was, they wouldn't have made it basically known that they wanted Surtain or Horn. You know, if you had another corner on the other side you felt that good about, you wouldn't be putting it out there on videos on the team website, telling people that, like, these are the guys that they like. Like, it was very well known, and that's probably why they went the two picks before them. Like, it was obvious this was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully we live in a world one day where it's just Peyton and Eli doing every broadcast and we get every angle.
That was fun. That
was pure joy, man. I love.
We just know that. as fans, as reporters, whatever. We know more about the game now than has ever been known before for people that aren't on the field playing or coaching it, because so much stuff is being brought to us, and we're just a more knowledgeable fan, reporter, whatever you want to say. That it's like we want more of that stuff, because it's like I don't want just the little like, oh, this guy can eat 14 pancakes in a single, yeah, that's cool. But I also want to know like how he does on this technique and why he's having a hard time going against this guy. Like that stuff is like, so that's why I find that stuff fascinating. But why I also think that we do get to a point where those different camera angles are going to be more and more on the TV at the same time. And if you don't want that on there and you just want to know about the guy eating 20 pancakes in one sitting, then they will sit there and they will put that on and you can take that off your screen. That's fine. But like, I want to see all that stuff develop, because you see that in the press box, which is nice. And when you're at the game, but when you watch it on TV, there's so much stuff going on that you just never get. And here's the thing, like when we get the all 22 copy and we're able to put it out there for fans and things like that, it's 2-3 days after the game, like you've already moved on to the next team.
Yeah, they've tried, just from the broadcast perspective, they've tried the primary angle being the sky cam angle behind the quarterback, and everyone hates it. They get terrible feedback on it. They've tried it. They know that that's an issue, that you can't see the whole field. But you know, they do it. It's called the Madden angle. People hate it because they say it looks like Madden, but you know, kids love it because that's how they play Madden. So you can see the entire field and how it develops. But I'm with you. There could be improvements on that. But I'm sure that was awesome in person to see Anthony Brown get torched. I'm sure that the Tampa Bay fans were loving that.
There was a lot of, I mean, I'm telling you, there was at least 3 or 4 balls that Dak threw that, I mean, just in person, you're just like, whoa, this dude is fearless right now. Like, he does not even care. And then Tom, too. I mean, there's a couple of balls that, I mean, obviously Tom Brady's Tom Brady, but just to see him in person, you're just like, and just like how quick he gets it out and how fast he sees this stuff develop. Now, it obviously helps both quarterbacks playing with very, very good wide receivers and that, but like,
Tom Brady's 44, guys.
I will sign up. I would sign up 44, for 17.
44. He should have retired 10 years ago by most like elderly quarterback standards. He should have retired 10 years ago.
I mean,
his Botox is working.
It's amazing. I just want
to. How about the touchdown they threw to Gronk, where they brought the blitz with Donovan Wilson, and you could just see this thing develop, and you're just like, oh, Lawrence is going to go get Gronk. Oh, and then even on TV, you can hear him going Gronk, like before he snaps the ball, like they're obviously adjusting the play, like Tom Brady all day long, and then like nothing against the coaching staff of the Bucs, but totally, with all due respect, without any respect. He's coaching that thing. You see that play. You watch that play over again where the one that was the, you know, questionable, is it offensive pass interference? What the, basically the throw that won the game to Chris Godwin. The play call that comes in, Tom Brady is furious when he looks at the sideline, and he is going over and over again, no, 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 no. Like, that's not what we're calling right now. Looks at his wristband, completely changes it up, goes to the Godwin throw because he knew that he was going to have a matchup where whoever was on, like, he knew obviously it was going to be Jordan Lewis because that's the where the matchup was taking him. But he knew he wasn't going to have his head turned around, and he knew that he could throw a ball like that, and it was either going to go to his guy or it was going to be incomplete. The clock would stop. Like, the way he just adjusts things like that, like, on a totally another level. And that's why, like you said, that Peyton Eli stuff, I'm all for it. I'm going to watch every one of those games.
While you're here, what was your thought on the OPI that was not called?
So I understand the Cowboys fans are going to bring up the Jalen Ramsey one. I obviously heard a ton of it after the game and saw it on Twitter and that. I don't think the Jalen Ramsey one should have been called, and I don't think that this should have been called. And I completely agree with Mike McCarthy on the whole thing when he was asked about it after the game. Like, late in games like this, like, unless it's just absolutely blatant, like, I mean, there's just everything's on the line. Let these guys fight. I mean, here's the thing that what I liked about it when I watched that play in replay several times is that, and again, it hurts because the Jalen Ramsey thing will go against what I'm saying right now, but that was a couple years. Well, that was last year. So yeah, maybe they're changing with it. And it's not just this game, but other games I saw over the weekend is I just get the feeling like the refs are like, we are not going to be the NBA. Where we're just going to let these DBs flop on these things like this, and then all of a sudden these are just getting called all the time, and then we go back to the line of scrimmage. No, this is football. This is why we're wearing pads and a helmet. Like, if you can't stand in there, that's just how it's going to be. Like, we're not going to be calling these flops. And because, do I think there was a little bit of a push off by Godwin? Absolutely. But I think at about mid-push is when Jordan Lewis decided, I'm going to really try and sell this thing. And then that was where it was almost so blatant, where it was like a ref's like, no, we're not going to be doing this. The league is not going in this direction.
And Godwin never fully extended his arm. That was the big thing for me.
Right.
Is if his arm's extended, that's the indicator they're looking for. It was very quick in his little, you know, it was just, he didn't have a big straight arm, which you could see, like Gallup had on Ramsey when Gallup and Ramsey were hand fighting last year. Gallup's arm is extended all the way, and it's just very easy for the ref to see. But that was something we talked about after the game, obviously.
And Cowboys fans are going to hate hearing this, but I'm just going to give you a dose of reality real quick. Much like all the time that was left on the clock after the Dez non-catch catch in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, did you really think even if that was called that Tom wasn't going? Maybe if he needed a touchdown, something could happen. Maybe, you know, whatever. But Tom only needed a field goal. You don't think he was going down there anyway? Like, even if that's called back or not, there was plenty of time. There was so much time that he rattled off three plays where he decided to just throw it at the cheerleaders.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of thought there was a play, and we need to get off this and go to the next game. But there was a play, you know, been between 1:30 and 2 minutes left where CeeDee Lamb got out of bounds after he got a pass. I was like, CeeDee's got to know to go down right there in bounds and make them either burn that timeout or – but, you know, the Cowboys also put themselves in a bad spot and the holding call.
Yeah, CeeDee didn't play great in that game. Between that, the drops, I mean, he even said after the game –
the interception,
he was not happy with himself at all. And, I mean, there's better days ahead.
Yeah,
I mean, he's still a young kid in that. I mean, he's still a freak athlete and playmaker. I mean, hell, that first touchdown pass with him and Dak hooked up on crazy. But anyway, he'll be fine. But that wasn't a great game from CeeDee Lamb.
Did you guys see the Magic Johnson tweet?
Loved it. Amazing.
So, for those that don't know, Magic Johnson had a tweet saying that he's really looking forward to this Sunday's game because it's a matchup between Dak and Justin Herbert, Amari Cooper, and Keenan Allen, and Joey Bosa versus Jalen Smith. Can anyone help me break down what Magic was saying there? Because I'm really confused.
I feel like he looked at a picture. I feel like a promo thing from like a year or two ago of the Cowboys and saw Jalen on there and was like, oh, yeah, he's still on there too. You know, and he led the team in tackles last year or something.
Maybe Jalen's playing right tackle.
But I mean, he probably should have said DeMarcus Lawrence or Micah Parsons with the Joey Bosa thing, but
he didn't know anyone else.
But if you follow Magic Johnson's tweets, this isn't that far off.
No, it's not. No, it's not. To be fair, it's kind of right down the fairway.
And I hate to lump these guys in to the same category. So please know that I'm not trying to do this. I really, really am not trying to compare these two people. They're nothing alike. But on the Twitter side of it, it's a little bit like, I hate that I'm even going to do this because I'm not comparing to Magic Johnson, but like, if you've ever listened to one of them OJ videos, it's like the it's the most obvious stuff.
Oh, I know.
Like,
we play him on the
you
show.
You know what? Yeah. I mean, if you're going to win the game, you got to run for more yards. Like, yeah. You know,
hey, just, Twitter world.
Hey, Twitter world.
It's yours truly.
I love that Twitter still won't verify OJ.
Sorry, Magic.
It might not be him. It might not really be OJ. I don't know.
OJ's killing it out there.
Oh, come on.
He's still looking for who did it, by the way. He said that the other day.
So inappropriate, KT. I blame myself for even bringing this up.
I'll never rest.
Yeah, I think John had to. Yeah, I was going to say John had to bring it up on Norm McDonald. Yeah. Yeah.
Norm McDonald would be proud.
OJ McDonald would be proud. Killed two people, by the way. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Like, my Twitter follows are very, you know, sports oriented. And those are just two of the top sports people I can think of that will just, like, tweet out some of the most, like, obvious, like, well, if the Cowboys are going to beat the Chargers, they're going to have to score more points, you know?
Yeah. Well, biggest storyline of this game, obviously the quarterbacks, right? That jumps out. But it has changed. I'd like to see what you guys think. Number one storyline is Terrence Steele versus Joey Bosa, though, right? I mean, because that can there's only a few people who can wreck a game. And I wish DeMarcus Lawrence was one of those guys. I think he's a really, really, really good player. But he ain't on the Joey Bosa level. Joey Bosa's a guy who can wreck a game the way Myles Garrett can wreck a game, or the way T.J. Watt can wreck a game, or Nick Bosa can wreck a game. Like, that's the big concern, is, like, the timing is not great because you'd sure like to have Lyle for one more game to be able to go up against Bosa before he had to start that suspension.
Yeah, and then also I just don't like the idea of Justin Herbert having time to throw. I mean, I know he's only in whatever. This will be his 18th professional game, but, man, he looks so good and just looks like he is – like just light years ahead of where he should be at this stage in his career. And man, if Chase Young isn't getting to him very much, like, I just find it hard to believe that. I mean, we don't even know if the Cowboys are going to have Randy Gregory. I mean, you could be starting Dorrance Armstrong or Terrell Basham at right defensive end. And you know, so they brought Mike on 8 blitzes against Brady. Maybe they dialed that up a little bit more. But man, it's not a great matchup. And as you mentioned earlier, the Rashawn Slater thing is going to be a big one because, you know, obviously he looked really good that first week, and many Cowboys fans knew who he was because that looked like who the pick was coming down to. So that's a big one too. The other thing is just the fact that just the Cowboys have to get a win. I mean, just you can't be starting this year 0-2 like this on the road. Even though it looks like they're going to be in the worst division again,
you can in this division. You can.
Yeah, I don't know though. I mean, what if Philadelphia just gets hot this year and you're just
they're going to get railed by the 49ers on Sunday, and we'll all know what the Eagles are.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would think so, but I was expecting more of a railing on the Lions too from the 49ers. So, I mean,
they're playing with their food though.
Yeah, well, okay, but I'm just saying, like, man, that. They need to win this game. One of the benefits, though, for the Cowboys, though, I do think that this will be a home game for them. I really do think that there's going to be a lot of Cowboys fans out there at SoFi Stadium. But it's just, you know, just in that post-game press conference Thursday night, just the way, I don't know, like, just the way Dak was and Amari was, like, you can just tell, like, the expectations, like, within the locker room are so high with this team that it's not like, well, let's just try and win the division and just see what happens when we get in. Like, they don't think that way at all, especially on the offensive side. Like, they think that they have an opportunity to be special. Like, they're certainly not behind the scenes going, oh, no, we got to start Steele. Like, I just with the key guys, the Dak, the Zeke, the, you know, Amari, CeeDee Lamb, they are very confident in what this offense can be, not only with their ability, but with Kellen Moore calling plays. I think that what it could do for their psyche if they lose this second game in a row just wouldn't be great. They got to win this game. I know they're underdogs to open it up, but this is a big game. It's not a must win, obviously. It's way too early in the year, but, like, I don't think you can just, you know, sit back on, oh, well, if they just are kind of around 500, I think they'll get this division again. Like, you can't be going into the playoffs this year. Their goals and their hopes behind the scenes are much bigger than just, oh, let's try and win the NFC East, maybe if it only is 9 wins.
Yeah, and I think one thing also is just that their schedule even after this is pretty easy. Like they don't really play a playoff team from last year until Kansas City, if I'm not mistaken. So, and that's like right, that's before Thanksgiving or something. So I think that is something to keep in mind, but also like, I'm with you, John. It's a big game because you see all those stats with like 0-2 teams and where they stand in terms of making the playoffs and all this. And you also just don't want to really inspire that kind of like culture, because culture was such a big, you know, talking point all last year. And I know it's a great indication that they played well against Tampa Bay and everything, but again, like, you just don't want to set that tone to start this season as well, whereas losing is just becoming second nature and something acceptable.
And maybe it's just me, because I'm just like a sports writer who really doesn't have much of a life outside of covering this team. But I just have this feeling of it's just been so long since there's been a meaningful win. Like, it just, like, obviously Dak goes down last year, and yeah, there were a couple games last year they won, like Minnesota, and you know, there were a couple games in there where they played well, but it feels like it's been so long since there's been a win that
probably
can, like,
New Orleans, right?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I just really feel like they need to get a road win against another good team to kind of set everything up going in the right direction, as opposed to just being like, well, it's fine. I start 0-2. We got Monday Night Football. We got the Eagles. We win that division game. We're fine. Like, I don't see how you can think like that. Like, they really, really need to get a win here.
Well, if it doesn't happen this week, then that win that you're talking about, that meaningful win, doesn't happen until the end of October. Because beating Philadelphia, Carolina, the Giants, even this New England team right now, and then a bye week, and then you get Minnesota, and who knows what they are, and then you get Denver, then you get Atlanta, then it's like at Kansas City in week 10. Like, this, you know, these.
But if
these
they rolled off those games in a, if they rolled off all those games in a row, or let's say they went 3-1 during that stretch or something like that, at least that's building something in that, right? Like,
yeah,
when's
sure.
the last time you even felt like it was building in the right direction?
Yeah, no,
2018?
You're right. No, I agree with you there. But in terms of like the level of competition, your schedule does get very easy. It would sure. be nice to beat a good team, because I think we all see the Chargers as legitimate, you know, playoff team. You know, it's hard to, they're definitely not the favorites in that division with the Chiefs. But, you know, one thing that's, we talked about Slater, it will be interesting to see if Brian Bulaga plays. He's been this way for about 5 years now, where he's good for about a half and then he's going to get hurt. That's what happened to him in week one. His back flared up on him. But if he doesn't play, then you're going against, you know, the second offensive tackle for them, or their backup offensive tackle. The guy's name is Storm. I don't have his last name. And also, one thing I'll say is, it's going to be very unlikely that the Chargers are as good on third down as they were against Washington. They were 14 of 19 on third down. I mean, they were just converting at a ridiculous rate. It's also very unlikely, although Herbert will give you a couple chances to make plays, it's also very unlikely that Herbert throws two red zone interceptions, which he did against Washington last week. Honestly, what I saw of that game, and I watched that one pretty closely, man, the Chargers really controlled all of that game. Those two red zone interceptions is what stopped that from being, you know, or is what kept that to be a 4-point game. You take away those red zone turnovers, you know, that game is probably a 10 to 13 to 14 point game.
Well, you can say the same thing about the Cowboys Bucks game. I mean, if they don't have the Bucks don't have those back to back turnovers, how out of hand does that game get?
Where you might be talking about coverage and all those things. You know, also the Cowboys, I thought, John, you had a really good article that all of you listening should check out, you know, 8 positives and 8 negatives to think about headed to week 2. And the part you wrote about the Cowboys in the red zone, because you're talking about building something, that's something that carried over. They're still like, man, we're still, for feels like the fourth year in a row, having some troubles once we get inside the 20 of finishing drives off. And I've kind of thought about it a lot in terms of what is stopping them from that when you have all these weapons. The only conclusion that I could come to...
Oh, there's one for sure, but go on.
The only conclusion that I could come to, well, I'm interested to see what yours is. Mine is that you don't have Travis Kelce, you don't have even a Mike Williams with the Chargers, who's a big red zone threat. You don't have a Gronk-type guy. The big a Waller from, you don't have the huge guy who can make himself bigger in those tight areas in the red zone. I mean, the guys you have, CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper, those are separation guys. And your tight ends are Graham. I like Jarwin and Schultz a ton, but that's the one thing that I've been going, I've been kind of racking my head with. Maybe that's the thing they need, is this lumbering 6'6" guy who can go above everyone and make that play. Jared Cook's been that way a little bit in the past. I don't really think he's that anymore. But that was something I've been thinking about a little bit. I don't know what you guys think.
That would help to have that. But I think the issue for this particular team is, because if you go back to 16 and 17, they were top 10 in the league in the red zone. And what did they have in 16 and 17? They had a Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott that when they got down there, they could do a lot of read option, and it worked out well. Do you really want Dak running that much down in the red zone, especially during regular season game? You want to bring back that read option like in the the NFC Championship game and do it a bunch, or in the Super Bowl? By all means, go for it. Then the other part of that is they did kind of a read option and inflicted out to Zeke on a play that should have scored, no doubt about it. And Jarwin misses the block, and Zeke can't make that guy miss. And
that was huge.
That's a big play. That's a play that in 16 and 17, that's six. And it really, to be honest with you, it's really not close. It's like as soon as the ball gets snapped and you see all the players moving in the directions they're going, you immediately like, oh, this is six. That was a perfect call at that time. And that was a perfect call at that time. And they didn't get six out of it. And so that's the one issue, is not having that run game for this particular roster. Now, like you said, if they have, let's say they go and add a tight end like that or something, or they develop something like that, maybe they do overcome that. But for the way that this particular roster is, it's not being able to run the ball down there. And maybe that means, you know, you bring in Tony Pollard with Zeke and maybe do some misdirection things and stuff like that. But like when they had success down there in 16 and 17, a big part of it was Dak and Zeke both being able to run the ball.
Yeah. And I also think that it takes a certain kind of receiver. And I think CeeDee Lamb can be that receiver that, you know, that Dez Bryant type, the Dez Bryant of 16, 17. I think Amari Cooper's great, but also he's that route runner type guy. And I think Gallup can be that guy as well, the Dez Bryant type. But I also think that receiving options, you have to have a certain kind of receiver that helps when you get down there. We saw it with Terrell Owens, like, you know, those big body but playmaker type guys. And for as talented as the Cowboys are, I do think that there's a certain skill set that, not that these guys can't do it, they just don't like specialize in it, if that makes sense.
No, and that's a good point, because to both your guys' points with the bigger, whether it be the tight end, bigger receiver, you know, we're obviously a long way away from this, but looking into the draft next year, that could be something that they end up targeting, because, hey, let's be honest, this receiving core ain't staying together. You know, with Michael Gallup going into free agency, it's unlikely they keep it together. They're going to have to address the receiver position likely in the draft, not saying first or second round, but maybe third round or something. But maybe this is the exact type of receiver they target.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Real quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. How bad is this back thing with Zuerlein? Because I can just buy at face value that he's working through some things. But, that's not good enough. No one wants to hear that, dude. We lived a Maher life. No one wants to hear that. So, come on. Give me a little hope here. We're going to be good. We get this straightened out.
Well, I will say he didn't look great in pregame warmups. And the thing is too is that he misses most of them to the left. And John Fossil said he thinks that's because he's such a powerful kicker that generally that's what happens is then it carries over to the left. So I'm just like, all right, so make sure every one of them's on the right hash every time he kicks. Then, but it's tough because there just isn't a guy out on. This isn't your fantasy 10 team league where there's just there's somebody else on the waiver wire. We'll just go get him on Wednesday. Like, it's just not like that. And so they made their bed by not adding somebody else in the offseason that Zuerlein was going to be the guy. And so John Fossil yesterday, said it had nothing to do with his back, had nothing to do with anything other than he just hit the ball wrong on the 31-yarder and on the extra point. And that's fine. There's misses and stuff. And
sure.
But how bad that 31-yarder was missed. That looked like some stuff that you only see on Saturdays and maybe Friday nights. Like, that does not look like stuff that you see on Sundays. Not from 31 yards. Not that far off. Not like that. Not from a pro kicker who's like a Pro Bowl caliber kicker.
Yeah, should NFL kickers kick the ball wrong? Should that be a thing?
Well, the thing
just miss the kick. It's okay. He'll get him next time. Yeah. Like, no, you can't. You can't be kicking it wrong. You can't be having weird stuff come off your foot, man. This is your job. You're getting paid $2 million for 16 games, okay? Come on.
It just speaks to the mental side of the game, though. It just, that's what kicking is. It's kicking is just like, it's like playing golf. It's like relief pitchers. Like, if you're a relief pitcher, you're probably a relief pitcher because it's not because you have a great knuckleball. It's because you can throw heat. And for some reason, guys that are in the bullpen are just great when they're the seventh inning guy or the eighth inning setup guy. You ask them to close out the ninth, and they look like they've never even played baseball before. Same thing with a closer. He's great for those final three outs. Oh, my God, don't ask him to try and get that last out in the eighth. Are you crazy? There's no way he can do that. That's not in his job description. It's just such a mental thing, and that's how it is with kickers. And honestly, nobody that's listening to this should be surprised by that because that's what we saw with Dan Bailey. I mean, Dan Bailey went from being automatic and taken for granted to being a guy where it's like he had the yips. It was just like he almost forgot how to kick, and that's why they moved in another direction and surprisingly kept Maher over him. So that's the thing. But I'm telling you, Fossil being close with Zuerlein and them having that, working relationship for like a decade, that's why he's going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But, man, you have a couple more games like they did on Sunday. You, just for the team's sake, you can't keep trotting that guy out there.
Correct me if I'm wrong, KT. Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Zuerlein pretty bad from short distance last year, but pretty good from far away? Hasn't that been a thing? So if it's a game-winning kick from 31, we're screwed. But if it's from 61, we're fine.
That's the thing, and that's like that's the same thing we dealt with Maher. And here's my issue, and it might be a little too big. Actually, Kent, last year, I'm looking at it. Last year,
thinking of Maher.
Oh yeah, you're thinking of Maher. Last year he made
Maher's the guy who could only kick from distance. That's what it was.
Zuerlein made
from 60 yards away.
Ever since Dan Bailey, all the kicking really just kind of runs together. Everything under 50, he made all but one.
I'm thinking of Maher. That's 50. My bad. It does run together.
Will say one thing also is just that the fact that the Cowboys did just sign I'm going to butcher his name, but Liram Hadrulahu to the practice squad.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that they did that at least shows some awareness of what the potential of where this could go, because that's not a household name or anything like that. But if your household name has a bad back, then he's no good. And so it's good that they at least have this contingency plan, because like John said, if he keeps missing these the way that he that he did, at least, you know, that 31-yarder, then you can't keep doing that. Then that no-name practice squatter is a better option. And, you know, we'll see how long the leash is.
See, Monday morning, they got guys working out at the Star. We'll know.
Well, and the other thing is, too, that if this keeps up, it's just going to lead to McCarthy and Kellen Moore just going for it more, even when they're on their own side of the field. And instead of settling for field goals, we're gonna be like, we got to go for this on this 4th and 5, 4th and 6.
That's fine.
Because we don't trust this kicker from this distance, and we trust our guys to be able to get this first down. You'd obviously feel a little bit better about that if you were better in the red zone. But because they have the red zone issues on top of this, at the very least, you have to have somebody you can count on to kick extra points. You can't be missing extra points.
This is a terrible take, but I'm going to throw it out here because I believe it. I believe Ben DiNucci played a lot in the preseason, a lot more than he probably needed to in the preseason when we could have gotten actually some more Cooper Rush and Garrett Gilbert type of time. I think Ben DiNucci got all that because that's kind of McCarthy's guy. And I think Greg Zuerlein is on this team because it's Jim Fossil's guy. And that's okay to an extent, but when you start affecting games directly, then you being homies with the coach kind of annoys me.
Yeah, but that's the way it goes, man. I'm telling you. You don't think that the Terrence Steele thing, using a Terrence Steele, is because there's like some talent evaluators, scouts, and stuff like that that want him to play? He's not starting at right tackle if Joe Philbin and Mike McCarthy don't want to start.
Especially the special teams. Special teams just have
Jerry's not stepping
guys.
In. For sure. I mean, that's why he brought in his long snapper.
Brought all his guys to Oakland when he left.
Yeah. right. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, Fossil's the same way. Brought in his long snapper, brought in his punter. He didn't bring in his punter, but he had experience with anger. He had anger issues. And so I would say that the Terrence Steele thing is the same way. Joe Philbin has to be like, no, this is our guy. And then here's the reason. Okay. And here's the other reason why I believe that, too. Is because he was the guy who was added as undrafted rookie free agent. That's clearly a guy that they were like, all right, the coach really likes him. Let's try and bring him in. And the coach is like, this is a project. I can make something work with this guy. I can work with this guy. Give him a chance.
The thing is, and I know you're just using an example with Terrence Steele, but Terrence Steele was not, you're right, he wasn't drafted. So that tells you he wasn't great. But like, he was invited to the Senior Bowl. He was seen as a guy with potential. Like, you don't just end up at the Senior Bowl if you got nothing. They're not just filling out rosters there. He was selected to go to that thing. And I think a lot of people thought, you know, it's just not – he didn't have a lot of good tape because he's playing at Texas Tech. Like, that's what I think. Now, I think what people think of Terrence Steele is based on him playing last year when he had no business playing in the NFL last year. And
well, McCarthy's all about developing guys, and that's what he always talks about, is developing these young players.
Yeah.
And so much here, DiNucci in the preseason thing, that's what he always talks about, this, like, you know, well, you know, you're going to go through these growing pains. You know, I did it in Green Bay. You know, we need 77 guys to win the Super Bowl. Like, you know, he has these things that he constantly goes to. And right now, there aren't a lot of things that we're seeing that we're like, yeah, this makes sense. But if Terrence Steele gets in there and he looks pretty good and he ends up being a really solid right tackle, we'll look back on this and be like, yeah, there were some growing pains, but hey, it was worth it because look, we developed this starting right tackle who ended up, you know, being a starter, and we didn't have to draft somebody. Now, I've watched too many practices and too many games last year to literally believe the words I just said, but I'm just saying them.
Sure. Let's do picks. John, Kent, Sod, and myself all got wins last week as we were the four who selected Tampa Bay to win that game. Our guest last week, Dalton, picked the Cowboys to win. I think he was just trying to be like, you know, wild card guy. So let's go to Los Angeles. I know we said San Diego, habit. SoFi Stadium, Sunday, 3:25. And let's start with Saad Youssef. Saad, who are you picking?
I'm torn, but I think I'm going to end up going with the Chargers to win it. And I think it's just going to come I don't think Terrence Steele is going to get Chaz Greened, but I just think it's going to be just enough. And I think that the Cowboys are going to lose 27-24.
He's just got this shirt on in the locker room like 2 days later. Like, I got Chaz Greened in Los Angeles. Like, it's just the thing. Like, sorry, go on. Who's next?
Chaz Greened was like on the Colts last year playing games. Because it got down to their like third string tackle, and I was producing our Colts pod, and they were talking about him. And after the pod, I'm just like, I'm so sorry you have to talk about this. This should not be the situation right now. They're like, yeah, it's desperate times here, guys. We're at the Chaz Green mode. We're in Chaz Green mode.
I've been going to Cowboys road games since 2014. Been in a lot of post-game locker rooms.
Oh, that was rough.
I don't know that I don't know that I'll ever remember one more than that, because that was just so rough and awkward that he had to like talk about that performance.
Well, it was more awkward than that, than Chaz himself. And he stood there and answered questions. Was Frank Pollock, the offensive line coach, who didn't really seem to be thrilled at all, of course. Yeah. So I don't think we'd ever talked to Frank Pollock after a game. So that was very memorable. But hopefully Dallas is better on the offensive line. I'll go next, KT. I'm taking the Chargers here as well because of the questions on the offensive line for Dallas. I think it's going to be a shootout game. I think Dallas is going to put up a lot of points, but I think the secondary for the Cowboys lacking a lot of weapons with Justin Herbert and his arm. So I think that'll be their strong suit. And, I don't know about the point spread. I don't even know what the spread is. I wasn't listening if you said
it. It's
3. It's 3.
Chargers minus
Chargers,
3.
Chargers. Okay. I'll take Chargers 27, Cowboys 24. I'll take the exact spread there.
All right. I'll go now. Cowboys 34, Chargers 30. Both teams down a right tackle. We'll see if Bulaga plays. And if Bulaga plays, he's not going to be 100% and he will not play the full game. I think that does matter a little bit. Obviously, it doesn't matter as much as Terrence Steele, because Terrence Steele is going to have the Joey Bosa assignment. I don't think the Chargers are going to go out and just be in blanket coverage, you know, all day long. I mean, the Cowboys are going to be able to put up points. I do see the Cowboys trying to get back to running a little bit, and I think that will help, though. I think having a little bit of balance will help things out. I'm definitely a pass-first type of guy, as you guys know, but I do think a little bit of balance. And the game plan was right last week. Kellen nailed the game plan last week. But I do think running will help a little bit. In the end, Dak and Herbert are both great. I like Dak a little more than I like Herbert. Herbert is going to, I think, and Dak, we saw, so it will throw it into 5 people, and CeeDee Lamb, he'll put it on the money though too. You know, some of those Herbert decisions were head scratchers, and you'll still see that some with him. He can run, he can make some really jaw dropping plays. I love him, but I think the Cowboys are going to squeak this one out, 34-30. I'm with John, and it kind of goes back to what we talked about after the game the other night. We were talking a little bit about kind of Dak's intensity and just when he got in Biotish's face and just kind of the maybe not taking any crap type of thing. I don't think it's going to be same old, well, we lost, get ready for next week, it's just one game type thing. I think there should be a lot of emphasis put on doing whatever it takes to pull this game out. So Cowboys 34, Chargers 30, close, evenly matched teams. I really don't see either of these teams as like Super Bowl contenders. I see them as playoff contenders. But I got the Cowboys squeaking it out 34-30. John?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Chargers 31-30. And my whole reason for this is just because, aside from one watermelon kick, we have not seen the Cowboys under Mike McCarthy win any of these games with Dak healthy. They're high scoring and they're exciting and they're 400-yard passing games and everything looks great. But the other team is scoring just as much, and the Cowboys have not been able to pull one out other than that watermelon kick game. And so I'll believe it when I see it, and they can pull one out. But again, I think it's going to be the same type of game where it's high scoring. Both sides are throwing the ball all over the place, and I think the Cowboys just barely come up short.
All right. So I'm the only one. All right. I'll wear this scarlet letter. You know, I'll be the one. That's fine. I just try to make it positive, you know. Just trying to stay positive on this podcast.
So then if they win, you feel confident they're going to be better in the red zone in this game then?
I mean, I hope so. It's hard because you look at one game and you go, how much of an anomaly is that? And then you have, 2 more years of evidence. But I thought Kellen was so good the other night. I thought Kellen was great. The plan was get the ball outside of the numbers. You're starting to see Dak do those things that we've seen, obviously, Brady do for years. We saw Peyton Manning do it in his later days. You see Aaron Rodgers do it all the time. and it's getting up to the line, know what's going on here, and then, you know what? The guy's in off cover, just flip it out to Amari Cooper, get 7 yards real quick. There we go.
Say, I like some of those plays. Hey, same thing with Tony Pollard, bringing him in motion and throwing it to him like that. Like a high percentage pass, very low percentage it gets picked off. If anything, it just gets dropped. You go on to – but if you get it to him in time, the timing's down like it was there, boom, first down, move the chains, clock keeps rolling. It's like a run. But
you're almost avoiding third downs at that point too. Yeah. You're getting 7 yards and you're making second and threes, and you know, the best way to not, you know, get in third down situations is to like never have a third down, you know? Just
absolutely
do good on first and second down, you don't have to worry about it. So
well, and then do what Tom Brady does. Like, it was funny because after the game I was talking to my brother about it, like, And it wasn't just that game, but just like over Brady's time in his entire career, it's just like the part that I'll always think about when I think of him is how the little things he does on first and second down. So when he does get to third down, there it's very rarely is he just Brady, they're in third and eight again, third and 10, third and 12, third and seven. It's like third and two, third and three, like where they can run it. He can throw something short to one of his running backs. Like, he just always seems to be staying in front of the chains, whether it be, you know, checking in to run plays, dumping it off of the short things. Like, it doesn't always have to be the big home run ball. Like, you're going to have to throw, as the NFL, to win games, you're going to have to throw that here and there, but it's about picking your spots, and just no one does it better than he does. And if Dak can do that, then the Cowboys will be in great shape.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun one. I'll be watching right along with Magic Johnson, and hopefully.
How disappointed is he going to be if Jalen gets those 16 snaps again?
I mean, look, if we're talking about Jalen the same way we're talking about Joey Bosa after that game, that's a good thing. And maybe Magic Johnson makes us all look out to be idiots. Because what if they're Randy Gregory can't play? We're going to slide Jalen down to defensive end this week. Yeah, that won't
happen. What are the chances that Jalen Smith has a better game than Joey Bosa?
What is 1%, Alex?
What's 0%? There is no chance. Zero chance.
Bosa, in this league, you can tear an ACL at any moment. So, like,
well, I guess, that's true.
Is there a better chance of Jalen Smith having a better game than Joey Bosa, or the Cowboys win the Super Bowl this year?
Cowboys winning the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, Cowboys win the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Shouldn't have taken that long to think about it, but I think we all went, wait, hold on, what's he asking?
And that's even after he brought up the injury factor. I mean, that could be the difference right there.
Here comes a weird analogy from John. All right, well, we'll see you on Sunday night. We've been waiting all day for Sunday night's podcast. So happy football, everyone. Can I just mention this real quick? Can I just get this out of the way?
Do it. Go.
This is mainly aimed at all my followers who think I'm crazy for picking the Cowboys in the division. The Washington football team's not that great.
Yeah. How about that? No, you're not a Taylor Haneke fan?
No, and I was not a Fitzpatrick fan. To me, there's no difference in the two. They're the same guy.
Are you the fan of Washington's fans having sewage spilled all over them in the stands?
That was amazing. I felt terrible for those people. That should never happen.
You guys did you see the Eagles blew out the Falcons. I don't know if you watched that game, but it looked pretty nice for the Eagles.
I have one note on that. My note is that Matt Ryan looks like Mick Jagger out there at this point.
He Falcons looks like are totally Eli in rebuilding Manning. Mode, but it's hard for any game to get that out of hand in the NFL. I mean,
Matt Ryan looks like late year Eli Manning. Big neck, tall, skinny, and just getting pounded. Just not going to have anyone block for him. And you can't ever fault anyone for drafting Kyle Pitts unless you need a franchise quarterback.
Dude,
go on.
No, I'm just saying it's crazy. It's like after that 28-3 Super Bowl, like that it was like that was the end of Matt Ryan. Like
they broke him. He was on my Athletic Football show this past summer, and he talked about it, and he said it was really hard. It's just really hard to deal with, and he still deals with it. He still thinks about it every day, you know, and he will forever. It's just maybe something that it's hard to overcome, especially when you have that was a long time ago, wasn't it? How many years ago was that? A long time ago.
Yeah, it was like 5 years ago, but it was he was an MVP that year. You know, it's just crazy.
Feels like his window is closed. Like it's like that window is about 3 years for getting back to the Super Bowl, and I don't know.
And hey, honestly, because of that, my hat's off to Russell Wilson because I understand Matt's upset about that, but there was a lot more other factors in it. If you're Russell Wilson, you're literally like, I threw the ball to the Patriots, I should have two Super Bowl rings right now. And he seems to just like raised his game up above it. But anyway, Kent, whatever you're about to say, I hope it's what I'm thinking, because there is one particular thing that stood out from this weekend in sports, and I hope it's what you're about to say. Go.
Oh. I was going to mention the trouble that the Giants are having with Jason Garrett, but I don't know what you were going to mention.
No, I was going to talk about that cat that fell out of the stands and they caught the flag in Miami.
Let's end on that. That was a historic moment, and I hope the guy who caught the cat got to keep it, and that it's his pet. That cat fell into his arms.
That's his forever.
And he Simba'd that thing.
Yeah.
He Simba'd that thing.
Oh, his arms, I guarantee, are racked right now.
That guy had never handled a cat before. You can tell. He had never had a pet cat.
Do we even know if it was a house cat? It could have been just a cat that just randomly, it's like an outdoor cat that just lives in that stadium.
Yeah, no, stadiums, they have cats that'll live there to keep the rodent population down, but they don't want them out in the field.
Sad for all we know, that cat
happens so often at sports games. There's just random cats because they kind of keep them around, but don't want them to mess things up.
Sad for that cat could have been garbage that Dwight Schrute tried to give to Angela.
Save Bandit.
Gosh. Oh,
God. And that's actually kind of a football tie-in, as that episode aired right after the Super Bowl right here. All right. Well, we'll see you Sunday. Cowboys, Chargers, 325. Magic Johnson will be there. We'll be there Sunday. We'll be here. John will be there Sunday. John will actually be there. We'll be there to talk about it Sunday on the next episode of About Them Cowboys. Bye.
According to retailers, the most popular Halloween mask this year is O.J. Simpson. And the most popular Halloween greeting is, I'll kill you and that guy who's bringing over your glasses, or treat.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.